Welcome to Talking EDAS, a series of conversations on economic development from EDAS, the Economic Development Association Scotland. I'm Peter Duncan, and in this episode, we're delighted to be joined by Claire Carpenter, Founder and Executive Director of Innovation at The Melting Pot in Edinburgh. Claire shares with us the story behind the pioneering work of The Melting Pot in showing the social and economic power of co-working, as well as highlighting the huge potential behind the growth of co-working across Scotland. She chatted to my colleague, Chris Story.
So Claire, thanks very much for joining us on Talking EDAS.
You're welcome.
I mean, we're here recording in the Melting Pot in the centre of Edinburgh. This is Scotland's Centre for Social Innovation and one of the world's oldest co-working communities, if I've got that right.
You do.
Briefly, could you tell us how the Melting Pot came into being and really how it's grown into what it is today?
Yeah, sure. So back in the early noughties, I wanted to create a resource base for people working in social change. I'd done a thesis on the motivation of people in who were working in social change. I've always worked in the third sector and been around self-employed people or small businesses. That's my sort of family background. And my experience was that basically at that time, you couldn't buy workspace unless you were buying an office. There was very little hot desking. Internet cafes had died. And we know that people thrive when they're within community. It doesn't matter whether that's in a work community, a work setting, or in their geographical communities. So I wanted to create a resource base for people working in social change. And I wanted to make that something that was a professional network where people could support each other, we could profile people's businesses and build social and intellectual capital. Yeah. That's a lot of buzzwords, but basically a resource base, a flexible, attractive, friendly, welcoming, practical resource base for people working in social change.
And what did you have to do physically to get the Melting Pot up and running?
Oh my Lord, well that was a beast. What we had to do physically, I had to create a non-profit company. I had to gather, a business development team. So it's a classic non-profit startup experience. Gathered some volunteers who were interested in the vision, in the idea of creating that resource base and who spent 2.5 years actively working towards it. We had to secure funding, which meant we had to secure evidence of need, evidence, like potential evidence of impact. And we had to find a building. That was hard. Find a building, open a bank account. There's so many things. Write a business plan, try to articulate the concept, which at the time, you know, shared workspace. Why are you sharing a workspace? Why are you doing like more than just shared workspace? What is all these learning and development programs? What's all that about? So huge amounts of influencing stakeholders, working out what on earth it was trying to do and build a business from scratch. And then in about 2007, so 2005 I constituted, 2003 I had the original idea, born of this research and lived experience. 2005 constituted, 2007 actually physically secured a lease and some startup funding to try and get the building open and start that business, and then went whoosh into opening 1 month before the global recession. So that was an exciting ride.
I mean, what were the expressions like on people's faces when you were saying to them, when you're going to them with this idea,
yeah,
I want to create a co-working hub?
Ah, well, at that time, there wasn't the word co-working hub, so that would have been simpler. But I would say if I'd have used the word co-working or tried to explain it, probably people were a bit bemused, and that might have been my language. I'm not a marketeer. I had the concept for the business. I knew there was a need. I knew that from my own experience working in the sector and other people, my friends. Like, I knew there was a need for it, being able to articulate it. But people were you know, it's that falling between different stools. Creating an office isn't a very sexy thing. I didn't create an office. I created a resource base for people who make social impact. And we've developed other services and products from this co-working business. But there are other people around the world, and maybe I'm deviating from your question, but there are a few other people like me around the world also serving their own local geographical community, a community of interest or community of place. And they did a similar thing. They went, where are the people like me? Where do they work? Are they working alone from home or in their bedrooms? They're working in coffee shops. They're not working productively. They're dispersed. How can we bring them together, resource them, support them? How can we do what economic development agencies aren't doing? You know, there were business centres. I don't fit in a business centre. Neither do the people that I work with or knew, you know, that culture. I'm not going to go to, I won't name names, but certain well-known brands at the time, they're not in our league. That's not what our purse was for. So, yeah, there were people like me around the world at a very similar time doing it. And I suppose we're all sort of pioneers and disruptors in that commercial real estate model, which is now common spread. Yeah. It's like everyone is going flex. So you couldn't probably buy a 5-year, 10-year lease very easily. Whereas we were like, no, let's take on this 5-10 year lease and then we'll sell it by the hour. I mean, what a notion. What on earth did I do?
I mean, you must be incredibly proud of what's been achieved, but what's your career journey been? What's brought you in your career to the point where you are now?
You mean pre-opening the melting pot or during the melting pot?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what was that background that brought you there? To where you are?
Okay, well, my family were all self-employed, so I'm working from home. So I witnessed, my family culture was small businesses, my grandparents and my parents. So I understand very much about small business, working from home, being entrepreneurial, just trying to run a small business, I suppose. And my working career had always been in the third sector as community development, people development, it was, you know, youth and community work. So developing projects and ideas, developing third sector organisations and projects. And also living, I lived for 8 years in a housing co-op. And so just sort of the ethos of the collective, I suppose. But I didn't want to make the melting pot a cooperative. I knew that wasn't what this needed to be, but it did need to be a non-profit organisation. That was important to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've heard you described as a social influencer.
Oh, I really?
Influencer.
Oh.
I mean, how do you think you've come to gain that title?
Well, that's a new title to me. I recognise being a social entrepreneur or being a social innovator, but I am an influencer. I had an idea. I'm just a creative person who worked hard. Like, I like turning ideas into action. I'm very goal orientated, and having created the melting pot has had influence on thousands of people, both within and around Edinburgh and Scotland, but also internationally with the work that we've done supporting other leaders around the world. So I don't know. How do I feel about being a social influencer? Nice. That's nice. You can tell I'm a bit too old for social media.
I mean, it's a different type of influencer, isn't it? You know,
I've had impact. Really pleased I've had impact. Yeah. That was what I did it for.
And that impact really has been felt in economic development, hasn't it? Because
absolutely.
You've become a springboard, or you've, you know, the melting pot and other places that have taken inspiration from what happens here, they've become a springboard for entrepreneurialism and innovation, haven't they?
Absolutely. And also that sort of geographical network development, like resource bases all over the world have been created. And the private sector are emulating and copying what more socially minded, I wouldn't say social entrepreneurs, but more socially minded entrepreneurs have done. The people in my generation of peers, as it were, the sort of first 10 years of co-working around the world, it's now mainstream, but there are always pioneers in every industry.
I mean, and as well, you know, like I say, everyone's become more socially aware and environmentally conscious.
Yeah.
Co-working seems to me as a way that taps into both of those those areas, really, doesn't it?
Well, totally. Sharing resources. Like now we've got this term, the sharing economy. But when I opened the Melting Pot, people were like, why do you want to share an office? Like, why would you want to buy one day a week or half a day a week or 3 hours? Why would you want that flex? I was just like, well, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you want to have flexibility? So the sharing economy made sense to me. I lived in a housing co-op. You know, there's this, that's a shared economy. It's a physical resource base of a different form called housing. And now you've got co-living is the a spin on on the old co-housing model and on the co-working model. You've got maker spaces, which are a particular type of co-working facility. But, you know, co-working at its heart is not just about a physical space and accessing that part-time. It really does have community development at its heart. Otherwise, it's just a flexi office. There's nothing wrong with flexi workspaces, but we can go and do flexi work from a normal cafe. So what makes it a good co-working hub is actually that community development, that desire to do community cohesion and community building.
And do you think people feed off of each other? You know, they bump into people in the co-working spaces in the cafe area.
Absolutely. Like, otherwise, why would you come in? Like if you just want to sit at a laptop, you can do that at home now. You can do it in a company HQ. You can do it from a coffee shop. So why join a co-working hub? Why join this type of facility? And it is all about the people in the community. Yes, there's the practical resources. You know, you need the right Wi-Fi, you need coffee, you need access to a printer. Many people don't have printers at home. You know, you need those practical resources, but it's really about the... You know, if you think of Maslow's hierarchy of need, you've got your shelter, you've got your food, subsistence, and you go up the way to self-actualization. Well, how are you gonna deliver on your business goals and your professional career when you move to a new location? How do you integrate with a community unless you've got children and go to the school gates and then you only meet a particular type of people? So, yeah, good co-working hubs absolutely have community development and ethos at their heart because of the impact that it has on their customers. And if the customers are having a positive experience coming back, it's like having a favourite pub, you know, they're coming back time and again because they feel like they fit. It's very important. We all need a sense of belonging and we need to be nurtured and we need to be part of a place. It makes us feel grounded. It doesn't matter whether you're in a physical city or town for 1 month, 3 days, 3 months, 3 years, you know, or more. Like we need to feel rooted in a place that we belong. So,
and what seems really clear is that, you know, co-working hubs aren't just for city centres.
No.
That, you know, you look at the map of co-working places across Scotland and communities of all sizes are really now embracing this idea.
Yeah.
Do you think the pandemic has added pace to that change?
Absolutely.
In terms of, you know, people who may have commuted from, you know, a suburb or a town into the city, you know, so many days a week are actually thinking, why can't I do this, you know, 5 minutes from my front door?
Totally. Pre-pandemic, we'd been trying to help people, business development, economic development type organisations around Scotland and elsewhere in the world to open co-working hubs in their communities, in geographical communities, smaller towns, secondary towns. But it was all chicken and egg. How did you get the customer to come? How did they get permission from their employer not to have to trek to the city 5 days a week? We know that from research done, people who work in a co-working hub spend money in the local economy. I mean, that's why everyone's desperate to get footfall back into this town centres. It's all about footfall, spending money, the secondary spend. So, but when we all ran away to our homes, we're told, go home, go work from home, you'll be safe there. And now we've got to come back out. And then suddenly everyone's out. And they're like, actually, I don't need to go to a city centre to work. I might go once a month, once every couple of weeks. I might go once a week. But I don't need to do that 5 days a week anymore. And that's happening all over the world. Business centres all over the world are having a massive transformation and the commercial office sector has gone suburb-tastic. They're looking at secondary towns, dormitory towns, and even building co-working hub type facilities into like residential developments, that mixed-use model. So, no, it's a massive shift.
I mean, that has to be good economic news. You know, our listeners are economic development professionals and you know, in terms of developing local economies, keeping people local for longer,
yep.
spending with businesses in their own yep. communities, not just flitting in and out. Yep. That has to be good news, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I used to give talks at co-working conferences internationally, and we talk about like local hubs. It's about attraction, retention, and development of local talent. Like you want people, like just as Scotland wants to attract people to come and do business in Scotland, set up their business in Scotland, so must towns, for instance, try to attract, develop and retain talent in their town. You know, what's going to stop, what stops one town decreasing in its overall economic output and value versus another increasing? And life is a seesaw. Towns and places are on a seesaw bit. It's how fast or how slowly they're declining or accelerating that matters. And I genuinely believe a good co-working hub can help do that. It provides community cohesion, professional resource base. You know, it helps people stick.
And it ties a lot into government policy as well. You know, we're talking about, you know, the well-being economy and community wealth building.
Yep. And local neighbourhoods.
Exactly, you know, 20 million neighbourhoods.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this is all of that in action,
isn't
it?
All of it in action, yeah. All of it in action. Mm-hmm. It's just very simply, it's a practical resource base for all types of entrepreneurs and individuals who work. And let's face it, most people that I know, in fact, I don't know that, maybe I know one person who doesn't have to work for a living. But I don't know about you, my friendship network is not full of people who don't have to work. So work is the biggest club that we belong to in our life. It's a club. And we're all in it.
How, you know, crystal ball time.
Oh, yeah.
How do you see co-working across Scotland developing over the next 5-10 years?
Well, that's a tricky one, because it is really hard to get a co-working hub off the ground in, depending on its scale, to make it viable. So it's about economics, and a small facility can only earn a small amount of money, but the cost to set it up and run it will be proportionally higher than opening, say, a facility that is 4, 5, 10 times higher, mm-hmm. you know. There's also, so, and around Scotland, you've got lots of relatively small towns. Let's be honest about that. I know there are 5 cities, but Dunfermline is a very small town, let alone calling it a city. And that's not me being rude. It's best practical, like the audience size. So I think there it's about supply and demand. How does the supply get set up affordably and quickly, and who owns that supply side? Is it done by the third sector? Is it done in partnership with the private sector or the public sector? What are the costs to getting things off the ground versus the timeline for getting customers in the door and servicing them? Because it's complicated. Yeah. You know, people are only buying a fraction of space and time, and you've got to get it right. If you're living in a small geographical community and your first 20 customers don't have a spot-on experience, there isn't the next 20 customers and the next 20 customers and the next 20 customers to draw upon and learn from, you know. So, and the other thing that really is going to matter is connectivity, Wi-Fi speed, because let's face it, a co-working hub is based on people sitting working at a computer. It's, you could have a maker space, like I say, that's a type of co-working hub. Speaking to one in Edinburgh this week, and you know, they have cabinet makers and a boat maker, and yeah, people who make stuff with their hands. That's a type of co-working space, but describe it as a maker space. Now, how many of those are around Scotland? Where are they? But that sharing economy is really important. I see the demand rising with people wanting it. It's certainly the case all over Europe and the rest of the world. Is people like, oh yeah, I can work a bit from home now. I can work from my camper van. I can work from my mum's house or my friend's house while I go and do that. Like we're now in a cultural stage where people have, not all, but some people have got more permission and encouragement to work flexibly. You know, that's coming across. But where are the facilities, and are they evenly spread? And what are the services within those facilities? Are they evenly matched?
And I understand sort of you and the team here at the Melting Pot are really helping to unlock some of that potential across Scotland. Can you tell us a little bit about the work that the team's doing to try and grow that network of co-working spaces?
So people are always asking, you know, where is something like the melting pot in X location? And it's quite hard to answer. And what with COVID coming along, a third of co-working hubs around the world died in the last few years, because all over the world, people are encouraged to work from home. Now, if you sell workspace, particularly if you only sell fractions of workspace, you soon lose your income stream. And many co-working hub owners don't own the building. They rent from a landlord and have been squeezed by the last few years, which is why I say it's a bit tricky what's going on in Scotland, though, who's picking things back up. So pre-COVID, we were working with all sorts of community development trusts, social entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs to try and create co-working hubs before there was maybe that demand supply side. You know, it's not quite as popular as it is now. And now we've just completed a mapping study, like who is doing co-working in Scotland? Is it co-working? Is it flexi office space? You know, do we want to get into semantics? Probably not right now and here, but you can get me on my hobby horse if you like. So where are they? Where are the ones that have died? It's quite hard to find things that have died because they don't respond to the survey. So we've got a new map just being produced at the moment, and we've identified or got responses from 33, I think it is, places around Scotland that they say they do co-working. We know that there's well over 80 or 100 that say that they do co-working. We haven't got responses from those yet, but we're starting to map it out and then starting to speak to the leaders in those businesses to find out, well, what the hell just happened here, people? Well, the last few years, how did you survive? And what do you need to have? What we need is an ecosystem of leaders and businesses that support a wider ecosystem. What do we need to help us flourish and get back out of the hole that the last few years has created? Where's the opportunity? How do we support each other? So it's exciting.
Brilliant. And listeners can head over to the EDAS website to see that map when it's
ready
as well.
Yeah.
Claire, that's been fascinating. It's been a great skip through the journey of co-working and just seeing a glimpse of what potential is there for the future as well. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Chris. And if anybody wants to know more about the work of the Melting Pot, how we support people, placemakers, then come on over to our website and I give free 15-minute, 25-minute chats to people about all sorts of things. But, you know, you can book and ask an expert session or a quick catch-up call with me to speak directly.
Excellent. Head over there now.
Thanks.
Many thanks to Claire for joining us and sharing with such energy and enthusiasm her hopes for unlocking further economic potential across Scotland. The Economic Development Association Scotland, EDAS, is this country's foremost membership-driven association for all organisations and individuals with an interest in economic development. Find out more at edas.org.uk and on social media use the hashtag #TalkingEDAS to join the conversation.